Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with David Slack. Kia ora, David. How are you?
Kia ora, Rachel. I'm well. Yourself?
Yeah, very good, thank you. It's nice to have a chat. It's been a wee while, and we've got some big stuff to talk about.
You bet.
Let's get started with, I think, the nurses' strike, because that was, the hot topic of yesterday, and striking for very good reason. Better pay and better conditions seems like reasonable, things to be asking for. What's your take on the situation at the moment?
It's frustrating to see that they're not being given due recognition. I can recall a few years ago, Laila Harre organised a action to do a sort of a catch-up in pay and condition, and when she was involved with the union, and it feels to me like it's just kind of drifted ever since then. It's the crucial thing was something that David Waite from the Nurses Organisation was saying yesterday. He said, ironically, some DHBs have requested to have more staff on strike day to provide life-preserving services than they would ordinarily have in their wards on a non-strike day. And he said, the staff levels are regularly below life-preserving services levels. The fact that they are below life-preserving services levels should concern everyone. And these two things, as you say, it's both conditions and pay, and those two things feed each other. If the pay's not good enough, people don't stay in the work, or they go to Australia, or they leave the profession because it's just not good enough, and that leaves fewer people to cover the slots, and that makes their work conditions more difficult. And that's both wrong, in employment terms, and it's also unsafe, obviously. We've got to value this properly, and it does sort of sit in a larger context as well, too, that in the last three decades or so, there has been this ever-growing inequality of wealth, because we have undermined the bargaining capacity of unions, and a whole bunch of neoliberal policies have made it possible for vast accumulation of wealth, and that all feeds into cost of living being more difficult for people who are earning a wage, and that affects nurses who do have union representation, but also have to deal with a larger context that is unfair.
Yeah.
People.
I guess the next stage is, back to negotiation. I wonder if perhaps we might see some movement, and what your thoughts on that are, because we've seen such a focus on people working in healthcare since the pandemic. There's been always a level of respect and support for people working in those jobs, but in the last year, it's really been thrown into light how important those services are and how important it is that they are properly staffed and funded. Do you think that the kind of, perhaps public weight of sentiment around this might help the position of the nurses at this point?
I really would have thought so, and yet you don't see as much of a willingness as you might have thought. Maybe in part it's because the DHBs have a lumbering system that has been rightly identified as needing fixing, and one person speaking for the DHB this morning was saying we hear this and we're going to have a look at it, and I think you had to wait until now to say this.
Yeah.
It wasn't abundantly clear to you until now. So there is something fundamentally wrong with the administration of the health sector, and it's being changed, but it's a huge thing to do. But they shouldn't have to wait for that to end, for this to be fixed. And so, it comes back to government initiative, really. And also, it's hard to imagine they could be deaf to this as well. I mean, the Boris Johnson's government was, but That's a dysfunctional goddamn government. So, I don't know what's wrong with this one.
Well, let's talk a little bit about bike paths and a bit about the Climate Change Commission's report. They're two separate things, but I'm sure that there'll be a segue between these subjects here, David. This bike path that's been proposed seems to be, this is the one that's taking you from town across to the shore or vice versa. Seems to be getting a little bit of flack from both cycle activists and also from people who oppose the whole principle of the thing. What's your thoughts on it? I'm sure you are, you know, as a cycle advocate, someone who's keen to see a bit of transport between those two spaces, but is this bike path the way to do it?
In the longer run, yes it is, and if it hadn't been, if it hadn't appeared in the context of a whole lot of other large clamouring for funding, it might not have got the bad rap it has. But the crucial thing is to liberate the lane, and that can happen very quickly, and in many respects is preferable to the dedicated path.
So
and,
what does
and the reason for that is reallocation means that you actually confront people with a new arrangement that challenges them to consider, is this the best way to spend my morning and my evening, 5 days a week, slogging in this grind of a commute? And it's been seen by study after study after study that reallocation actually encourages people to make a permanent change, and that the cars disappear. You know, it sounds like voodoo, but it's real. People, given proper encouragement, say, "Oh, actually, I could do this." Bikes in the middle of that. Oh, sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, for people who aren't like familiar with the terminology, what does liberate the lane actually mean? Is that a long-term thing, a temporary suggestion? What does it look like?
Well, it's a proposal for a temporary trial to demonstrate that it can work over summer on the Harbour Bridge. And we're wrong, then we can revert. But everything about the pent-up demand tells me that it's going to work in the same way that it's worked in so many places around the world. You know, it's actually a preferable way to get around. And to back it into the larger question of climate crisis, the clearest message in the Climate Commission final report yesterday was road transport can almost be completely decarbonised by 2050 by increasing walking, cycling, public transport use, reducing vehicle travel, and by switching to low emissions vehicles. Now, to make that happen in Auckland, we're actually quite close. We have a very large ring that's almost connected up, and once that's connected up, it's going to be much more appealing for people who right now are scared shitless of riding a bike in Auckland, because it really is a perilous thing. But you have dedicated lanes to get onto, and people get on them and they find that they're unmolested and they love it. Now, to make that happen in Auckland, you've got to be able to get across the harbour. And opening up a lane, liberating the lane, making one lane available on the Harbour Bridge would do the connecting to that. So, you know, this is not an indulgence of people who want to cycle for their jollies. It's an actual climate crisis response, and it's one that makes it possible for people in large volume to switch over to be a bike rider around Auckland. And, you know, I know that you're a bike rider, and you know that it's a great way to get around. And the more people who do it, the more comfortable it gets. And because we're moving into an era of e-bikes, it means that all of the remaining objections, namely, I'll get wet, I can't ride up a hill, are also removed because of these things glide you around in speed and comfort and make it easy. And they are more expensive, just getting to another objection here, but they're way less expensive than a second car, and you don't have to put any gas in them, and you don't have to go back for your waff, and you don't have to go for the $2,000 repair job that you weren't expecting. All of those things. Now, bizarrely, this is being presented as the indulgent, entitled perspective on getting yourself around in the city, when, you know, if you want to find entitled, I'll give you entitled. It's saying there's a climate crisis, but I insist on my right to go on driving my SUV or my double cab ute with no change, and that we go on emitting record levels to the detriment of the climate. I mean, it's nuts.
The whole thing is inverted. It does feel like the conversation has got to this sort of unhelpfully polarised space at the moment. Just to bring it back very briefly, before we let you go, David, to the Climate Change Commission's final report, which was released yesterday. There's a whole bunch of recommendations that they've laid out for transport, as you've mentioned. One of those big ones being that all cars imported by 2035 must be electric vehicles. Talks about decarbonisation and targets to get people walking and biking. We're also seeing agriculture. There's a huge push in there for a 47% reduction range for agriculture in the higher percent, and also to see how energy, forestry and general transition might work. Do you look at this report and think, you know, this is something that seems like a tangible blueprint from the outside? Is this something that you think, you know, we can tackle as a country?
You bet. I mean, we're better off with it than without it. There are objections that it's soft pedaling a bit, especially when on the too many cows. But it is a tension, a very difficult tension, because there's a large economic contribution at issue there, and you've got to find a way for a just transition. But there's enough roadmap in there of specific changes for you to say this was worth doing. What it leaves to be done, largely, I would say, if you're looking for a shortcoming, is just exactly what we're going to do about the methane, which is identified as the particular problem and one that we contribute to in particular. So they've kind of deferred that a little, and some harder decisions have to be made about that. But, you know, we can at least be doing vastly more on our emissions from transport and moving into e-vehicles or e-bikes in particular. You know, just changing a car from one kind to another isn't actually all that great. Mm. What we need to be doing is changing the way people move around. And it's there. All of that is there. You've got objections from people like Judith Collins saying, "Oh, they hate cars and they want them out of it." And I think it's a terrible appropriation of the use hate. And I've got I'm going to throw it back at her. This is what you do if you don't hate all the babies that are going to be born in the next 100 years.
Big call there, David. Yeah. Big call there.
Do you wish to decarbonise this country, or do you hate all the babies that are going to be born in the next 100 years?
And on that note,
there you go, pop-up leader. What do you think of that?
On that note, David, I think we've got to wrap it up now, because we've got to play some songs before the news. Thank you so much. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks, and be safe on your bike out there.
Will do. Bye.
Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with David.